So Lankirtam. Very well decorated. Shama. Black. Turanga. Horses. Yojitam. Tackled. Ratam. Chariot. Mrigendra. Lion. Dvanjam. Flagged. Asrita. Under the protection. Purat. From the capital. Avritaha. Surrounded by Rata, charioteers, Asva, cavalry, Dvipapati, elephants, Yukteya, thus being equipped, Svasenaya, along with infantry, Digvijaya, for the purpose of conquering. Nirgatal went out. Translation: Maharaj Parikshit sat on a chariot drawn by black horses. His flag was marked with the sign of a lion, being so decorated, and surrounded by charioteers, cavalry, elephants, and infantry soldiers. He left the capital to conquer in all directions. Maharaj Parikshit is distinguished from his grandfather Arjuna, for black horses pulled his chariot instead of white horses. He marked his flag with the mark of a lion, and his grandfather marked his with the mark of Hanumanji. A royal procession like that of Maharaj Parikshit, surrounded by well-decorated chariots, cavalry, elephants, infantry, and band, not only is pleasing to the eyes, but it's also a sign of a civilization that is aesthetic, even on the fighting front. Translation: Maharaj Parikshit sat on a chariot drawn by black horses. His flag was marked with the sign of a lion, being so decorated, and surrounded by charioteers, cavalry, elephants, and infantry soldiers, he left the capital to conquer in all directions. So this is a description of Maharaj Parikshit. What is he doing? This is the Digvijaya, which means conquering the directions, which is a formality to indicate that the king controls everybody. So directions mean east, west, north, south, everywhere. But as we see from the next verse, it's a little bit bigger than we think it is, because it includes all of the varshas on Varsha, or in the Jambudvipa, not just our Varsha. So he went to these other varshas that I've mentioned when I was analyzing Canto 5 with Ketumala, Badvasra, and Kuru, and Kimpurusha, etc. All these other varshas all over the place. He was going out and conquering these places. Which means that he didn't have to fight so much as just get the acknowledgement from the different leaders there that they followed him. This indicated that he was in control, which is the meaning of a king. He actually gets the obedience of people under him. In the case that someone doesn't want to be under the king, then they have to fight. And if the king wins, then he has to be obedient to the king. So this is the method of determining who's in control of the state. So the king should actually control everything very nicely, and everyone should be obedient to him. And in this way, the kingdom is ruled properly. So the kings here were highly qualified since they were coming as descendants from Manu. And they are empowered by the Supreme Lord. They are called Vibhutis of the Lord. They have special powers to carry out their jobs of ruling the earth. So they're just not ordinary people or even ordinary kshatriyas. They're very special kshatriyas with the possibility of leading. And the whole battle of Kurukshetra was fought in order to determine who was the legitimate ruler. Who could be the legitimate ruler, the actual ruler? Who was most qualified to be the ruler? Of course, there were arguments about, you know, birth, who was the better birth or whatever like that. Ultimately, of course, it was who had Dharma. So Yudhisthira represented Dharma. He was actually the son of Dharma, technically speaking, according to the pastime. So, and he was supported by Krishna. So then naturally he should be the leader. And the war was fought, and then Yudhisthira became the leader along with his brothers. And then when they retired, as was described in the previous chapter, they appointed Parikshit to be the ruler, who was actually the remaining descendant of their line. So he became the ruler. And they supported him. So it was not only a matter of birth. Because he's born in a royal family, then he gets to be the king. He was also qualified. So that is what these verses here are showing, that he was not just a king by birth. Of course, that's also good in this case, because he comes in the Manu's line and from the Pandavas, but also because he actually was qualified. He had the respect of all the other leaders and of the population. So then naturally he was the king. So he didn't have to force his way into power. Rather, there was agreement among all people, all leaders, that he was qualified. So this particular verse shows his qualification, not in the character sense, but just by appearance. So it shows how he was going out to conquer the directions, and he had his black horses and his chariots and his flag with the lion on it. He was accompanied by the chariots and the elephants and the horses and the cavalry, etc. So it was a very grand procession that appeared on the road. So this emphasizes the fact that he was qualified to discipline everyone in the ten directions, so to speak. But we saw previously that he met this person disguised as a king, who was not qualified to be a king, and he was attacking the bull. So it was a rather different type of obstacle that he had to meet. He didn't have to meet some, you know, king who challenged him in fighting, who was ruling another Varsha or anything. He met this disguised person who was a Sudra, not unqualified completely, but dressed up like a king. And he wasn't even willing to fight. He was attacking an animal, a defenseless animal. So that was the that was the challenge to his kingdom. It wasn't just a military challenge at all. It was a dharmic challenge. So of course, this is a symbolic story because it represents the advent of Kali Yuga. Krishna and Balaram and Vedavyas appeared at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. And then after Krishna disappeared, Kali Yuga begins to assert its influence. Kali Yuga means that less qualification is there among the population, more sinful activities, etc. So it will be a very difficult job for the king to rule, because the time itself is against them. Time itself will make more adharmic people rise up. So it is, we could say, a hopeless battle in one sense against the tide of Kali Yuga. So Parikshit had the unfortunate circumstance of becoming the king just at the time that Kali Yuga was beginning, and in one sense it cannot be stopped. It's just the will of the Lord that Kali Yuga appears. Whatever. But we see that Parikshit, nevertheless, was determined not to let Kali Yuga enter his kingdom, and he was successful at doing that. So, therefore, he was not just brave in terms of fighting, expert at killing enemies and whatever, but he had a great sense of dharma, and he was very strict that a dharma could not enter his kingdom. So one can be defeated by enemies who are, you know, militarily very strong. But the other type of defeat is, even if you are ruling, if in the kingdom there is lots of adharma, then you lost the battle in one sense. You're not a real king, because you've allowed adharma to enter in and take over the kingdom. Parikshit Maharaj was very strong and qualified, and therefore he prevented adharma from entering the kingdom. So that adharma, of course, was represented by the fact that Kali was attacking the four legs of dharma, which is truthfulness and cleanliness and compassion and sense control, tapas. And all these were getting destroyed by personification of Kali. And what came up in the place of these things? Illicit sex activities, gambling, meat eating, etc. All sinful activities. So, in other words, adharma means prevalence of sinful activities, which automatically destroy the principles of dharma, which were the legs of the bull. So, Parikshit Maharaj prevented that. He was not interested simply in having military power, which he did have, but he was interested in maintaining the dharma, which is his duty. More than simply being in power, his duty was to maintain the principles of dharma. So that's on the, we say, the material level of managing. Managing means not just controlling, but establishing the correct principles by which people should live. Which means minimize the sinful activities. So therefore, all these activities like violence, etc., have to be prevented. And Kali Yuga represented all the sinful activities. So he was able to prevent him from entering into his kingdom at that time. The question was asked, of course, of why he didn't kill him. And then there would be no more Kali Yuga. He just said, because Kali Yuga approached the king. He said, don't kill me, don't kill me. I need a place to live. So Parikshit was compassionate on him, and he didn't kill him. But he allowed him to live where there was hoarding of gold. So that was his foothold. But as long as Parikshit was in power, he couldn't do anything. Later on, as the kings became more, let's say, weaker, then Kali began to exert his influence again. So why did he actually let him live? It's because ultimately it's the will of the Lord that Kali Yuga starts. So it was going to be inevitable anyway. So in that sense, he could not be killed in that sense. So therefore, he allowed him to stay in certain places, but he was limited. Later on, influence grew. But as long as Parikshit Maharaj was alive, then he maintained dharma, these principles. As I've mentioned before, these principles are important, but we should never separate these principles from bhakti. It would appear that they are separate, because we just have the cow and the bull and Dharma and the earth and their relationship. But actually, Parikshit Maharaj was previously described as a great devotee. And the Lord himself rescued him when he was in the womb. And Parikshit was able to see the Lord. And as a child, he was always thinking of Krishna. So he was definitely also a very great devotee. So though the story doesn't dwell on that so much, it's just about Dharma and the earth. Nevertheless, Parikshit Maharaj was also a great devotee. So we cannot separate Dharma from devotion. And if we try to do so, then we will end up again in a very miserable position, because the Dharma will not be established properly. So Maharaj was qualified to carry out the principles of Dharma, as we see in this chapter, because he was also a great devotee of the Lord. And of course, you say behind him was the will of Krishna that he maintained the kingdom properly. So obviously we see that the descendants of Manu are empowered by the Supreme Lord. If they reject the Lord, where is their power? Lord will withdraw. He will not give them any powers. So similarly, even in the material world, which is, we don't have Manus anymore, at least present with us, people who are trying to govern should govern according to scriptural principles of Dharma, as we see Parikshit Maharaj was doing. But to do that properly, they also have to surrender to the Supreme Lord, and they will get the power to institute Dharma properly. So Parikshit Maharaj was doing two things. He was doing his duty as a king, maintaining the society, making sure that the population was protected, and at the same time that they were minimizing their sinful activities by following Varnashram system, etc. So that's the material aspect of the Manus and their descendants, of the kings and the rulers, the Kshatriyas, etc. Okay? But then, well, we cannot separate that from the fact that these leaders have to be devotees. So if they're not devotees, the power to rule properly will not be there. The Dharma will get corrupted sooner or later. So that is why one has to maintain the devotion also. So some of these kings were greater devotees than others. And in the Bhagavatam we have examples of great kings. So we have kings like Dhruva and Priyavrata and Swayambhuva Manu, etc. So some of the great kings are mentioned. Then we have Ambarish mentioned in the ninth canto. Very, very great ruler also. He was so devotional, he had no interest in ruling at all. But he gave over his kingdom to able ministers, and they did all the rituals and governing for him. And he just did his bhakti. So, therefore, here in the story of Parikshit Maharaj, we have the ruler ruling very nicely, but simultaneously, it doesn't work unless the person is a devotee of the Supreme Lord. So this is a problem in the world, because as long as societies encourage an atheistic civilization and they elect atheistic leaders, no matter how good they are in terms of their material character, they will fail, because they don't have the mercy of the Lord. They will not be able to implement things properly, and they cannot satisfy everybody. So whatever they do is very impermanent and imperfect. So therefore, if we do want a proper system, we have to have a system that includes bhakti. We do have to have, of course, proper principles as established by Dharma, but we also have to have the principle of bhakti there. So this is the point of Bhagavatam. Though we see many descriptions of Varnashram and kings and rulers, etc., it's not an independent system. It is not independent of bhakti. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this Daiva Varnashram. If we omit the bhakti, what does it become? Asura Varnashram. It may look very nice because we'll have rulers and we'll have merchants and we'll have laborers and we'll have intellectuals, etc. But the goal is not even up to moksha, what to speak of bhakti. It ends in the material world. So that also cannot survive. Even to get the prosperity in the material world, that will not work out properly. That's why we see in societies there's always a problem. No matter what type of system we introduce, whether it's a royal monarchy, which that was prevalent throughout most of the world and Europe, etc., and other countries previous to 100 years ago or 200 years ago, or we can have democracy where people elect. But in any case, we find out that it doesn't work because there's a large section of the people that don't get anything, that are dissatisfied. Some people get their senses fulfilled, but a majority don't. And therefore, there's always discontent in society because of that. No matter what system we use, whether it's monarchical or democratic or communist or whatever, it doesn't work out. We always get the persons controlling. They're the ones that are enjoying, and the people underneath are the ones that suffer. Why? Because they can't introduce a system properly because the people themselves have material desires that they cannot control. So therefore, they end up taking all the products for themselves and enjoying. So we have to have a proper system with proper rules, but in order to execute the rules properly, then we have to have someone who is devotional. Then the system will work out. So Parikshit was a great example of that, and he was able to maintain everything within his kingdom very beautifully. So he was a king in his own right. So Prabhupada in the purport mentions that he was different from Arjuna, who was the other great fighter, hero in the battle of Kurukshetra, and the main figure with Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Maharaj Parikshit was not simply following after him. He had black horses instead of white horses. He had the symbol of the lion on his chariot, not Hanuman. So he was actually different, very different from Arjuna. He was not simply blindly imitating him or following him. So he had his independence and he had his own personality, etc. Therefore he was actually, in himself, he had his qualification, not depending simply on his lineage or whatever. So that is why this distinction is made between the black horses and the white horses and the symbol of the lion instead of the symbol of the Hanuman, because he was qualified in his own right. So as devotees of the Lord, there is one quality that manifests. That's the second quality of bhakti. The first quality of bhakti, it destroys all kleshas, all suffering. The second quality is subhada. It bestows all auspiciousness. So one meaning of that, it gives all good qualities. The person who does bhakti has all wonderful qualities. And if he has all wonderful qualities, then naturally everybody becomes attracted to him. Of course, he also is very attracted to everyone else. He's merciful and compassionate to everyone. But all the other people are also attracted to that person. So that's one quality that manifests naturally with the progress of bhakti. It starts appearing in the beginning of bhakti even. And as one progresses, it becomes more prominent. So therefore the devotee is attractive to all living entities because he has all wonderful qualities. These are not material qualities at all. The devotee is developing spiritually, so he develops spiritual qualities. Who is the most attractive person, the most qualified leader? Krishna. It's all attractive. What are his qualities? Spiritual qualities. He's attractive because of spiritual qualities, not material qualities. It's so attractive that even Shishupala could not help thinking of him, even though he hated him. So we find in Bhagavatam that there's descriptions of Shishupala and other demons like Kamsa. They had great hatred of Krishna and great fear of him. But at the same time, they could not help thinking of him. So we see a description of Kamsa while he was eating, while he was sleeping, while he was walking. Every time, he was always thinking of Krishna in fear and hatred. But why? Why such an obsession? And because Krishna was so attractive, so beautiful, so full of wonderful qualities, that he could not help but thinking of him, even if it was in hatred. So same with Shishupala. He got absorbed in Krishna because of his wonderful qualities. So that's an example of a demon who doesn't even like the Lord, hates them. Therefore, it's easy for other people to become attracted to the Supreme Lord and his wonderful qualities. So the devotees also have such wonderful qualities. They begin to develop them. And if the devotee is advanced or eternally perfect, as in the case of the Pandavas and Parikshit, then their qualities are naturally attractive to everyone also, just like Krishna's qualities. So therefore they're natural leaders, because everyone's willing to follow those persons. They don't look for faults, they just are impressed by their wonderful qualities. And they willingly follow them, because they have trust in them. So that is also the example of Parikshit. In his own right, he was very, very attractive, because he was a great devotee of the Lord, and he manifested all wonderful qualities. So therefore, the citizens would follow him nicely. We see when Ramchandra was king, then citizens were naturally following him, very obedient to him, not because of simply he was powerful enough to enforce law upon them, because he was most attractive and they were attracted to him. And they understood he has great qualities. So similarly with the great devotees, when they become leaders, they automatically get the respect of all the people. So that's so for Parikshit. And therefore when he came out on his chariot and was going out to conquer the world, he was glorious. Just by seeing him, he was victorious. There didn't have to be any fight at all. He was just, by his very presence, everyone understood that he is the king. He's the ruler, qualified ruler of all places. And he was simply following out the will of the Supreme Lord. In one sense, he doesn't need to rule the world or do anything. He'd rather simply worship Krishna, but with the will of the Lord, he'd do this, so therefore he carried out this as a service to the Supreme Lord. Of course, the Lord was very pleased with his service. Okay, any question? Well, we have both cases. Many devotees come and they get great relief also. So if some get some suffering, I don't know if it's so much more suffering, because it's hard to say. If they weren't devotees, maybe they're going to suffer more than if they became devotees. So in some cases, it may be the residual karmas which are still going on for them. The karmas may not all be destroyed if they have committed aparadhas previously in some previous lifetime or even in this lifetime, and then all the karmas are not destroyed so perfectly, so therefore the karma is coming anyway. So that's one reason why they could have some suffering within this when they take to the process of Krishna consciousness. Of course, we know that the Lord is the protector of everyone, so ultimately he protects, but it's according to degrees and to qualification. So therefore, the Lord is willing to help, but sometimes there are karmas in the way, and they must be experienced to some degree. So therefore, it may be due to that reason. The other varshas are called boma swarga. Boma means earthly. So we have swarga on a higher level. So many yojanas above the bhumandala. And then we have here. So it's also considered to be heavenly like, these other varshas, compared to the earth. So their standard of enjoyment is higher than the earth's enjoyment. So normally you can't go there unless you're qualified. So if you're a great devotee, of course you can. And in the next verse it says that Parikshit Maharaj went to these places, Badastra, Ketumala, Kuru, Kimpurusha, etc. These are the other varshas. So he was able to access them and go to those different places. And all the rulers agreed, okay, you're our king, like this. So it depends. Sometimes some of the kings only rule Bart Varsha, some will rule the whole of Bhumandala, or the whole of Jambudweep. So it depends on the particular king. In this case, Parikshit, for some reason, he was able to get control of the whole Jambudweep. But normally, other people cannot enter, because it's a svarga sphere, it's a heavenly sphere. And the only way you can get there is by punyas, or the devatas, after they lose their punya on svarga loka, then they drop down and they get born in these varshas, other varshas, and then they can enjoy a little more on an earthly level. I suppose we can say that people, because the Yuga Dharma in Kali Yuga is chanting of the holy name, so that's a good fortune to be born in Kali Yuga, I suppose. In that sense, you could say that it's great fortune to be in Kali Yuga, so we give credit to personification of Kali for that, because Yuga Dharma is chanting the holy name, so in that sense, we get good fortune from it, only in that sense.
So even though things are really bad in Kali, if we change our perspective, we can actually... It's actually a lot of good we can kind of get out of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what's stated at the end of the Bhagavatam. Everything is bad in Kali Yoga. Kalar dosha nide rajana se. It's actually an ocean of faults, Kali Yoga. Everything is faulty. Everything is sinful. Everything is completely hopeless. But it says one good quality, nam sankirtan. Chanting the holy name is good quality. So that makes up for all the bad qualities. We of course could say that every yuga has a dharma. In that sense, they get some good fortune, meditation in Satya Yuga, sacrifices in Treta Yuga, deity worship in Dwarpa Yuga, and in Kali Yuga we get Sankirtan. So, but the other problem is that as we go on from Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, Kali, the bad qualities get more. So by the time we get to Kali Yuga, most of it is bad. Yeah? And then the other processes don't even work. Meditation, sacrifices, deity worship are less powerful. So the only thing that will counteract the Kali Yuga is Nam Sankirtan. So that's the hope for Kali Yuga, in spite of the fact that everything's bad. If people chant the holy name, then they can be saved from all the bad qualities and the bad governments and whatever. So it's a mercy of the Lord for the other, say the miserable condition of Kali Yuga. It's the way in which we can overcome all of the miseries and the bad qualities of Kali Yuga. So in that sense, we don't have to lament that we're born in a miserable age, because if you have Harinam, then we can counteract that, and it's as good as Satya Yuga.
And so is Kali just as a person on this planet, or what's Kali's position?
Well, this story itself is a symbolic, because we obviously, the bull has four legs, and the four legs are the aspects of Dharma. That's not a normal cow, obviously, a bull. And then the cow is actually the earth. But we do see that cow actually is a personality also. There is Bhumi Devi, and she can't take the form of a cow. So we can say that Dharma is also personified. Of course, it's also Yamaraj, but he's also a person, and he can take the form of the bull. So in one sense, symbolic stories on the spiritual level are not just symbols, because symbols are also real, ultimately in the spiritual realm. So like we can't really distinguish one from the other on the spiritual level. Material level, we say symbolism is only a poetic expression or something like that. It doesn't really mean anything, it's imaginary, but in terms of spiritual things, ultimately, the symbolism also can be personal. Those symbols can become persons. It's the nature of the spiritual world that everything is conscious. So we should make, it's like that, so much look at them in a dual way, with a logical, materially logical mind. It's a little bit of a mistake to do that, because the spiritual world and the devotees and Krishna, even if they come in the material world, they're not part of the material world, so therefore symbols and whatever, they can also be real.
Yeah, the gentleman, when he's saying that we worship Kali, we're intelligent in this Kali Yuga, because we've got the name, but does Lord Chaitanya appear in all the other Kali Yugas? Do we always get the name?
Ah, okay. Well, there is chanting of the name. There is Nam Sankirtan in every Kali Yuga. So that's the good fortune. Our Kali Yuga is special because we not only get the chanting of the holy name, we get a very special avatar to do that. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The other yugas, the 999 Kali Yugas, don't get Lord Chaitanya. They get the Kali Yuga avatar, who's a Shaktivesh avatar, who's black in color. So we are very special in our particular age after Krishna's appearance, who also appears once in the day of Brahma. Then we get, instead of the normal Yuga avatar, we get Krishna himself as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a golden color. So that's the very special symptom of this Kali Yuga. So it's even better than any other Kali Yuga, because we get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is not different from Krishna. And he's spreading the holy name. So not only we get Lord Chaitanya, but the name also becomes different because of that. So he's also giving special name of Krishna. Whereas in the other Yuga cycles, they're giving other names, Vishnu and Rama and other names. So Lord Chaitanya is giving Krishna's name, so it's also special. Not only that, he's also giving Radha's name. So we get something very special in our Kali Yuga that's not available in other Kali Yugas. So Lord Chaitanya is not another Yuga avatar. He's very special because he's also Krishna himself. Okay? So we get special mercy in Kali Yuga. And therefore, the name in Kali Yuga is also very special, representing Radha and Krishna.
Hi Krishna. So you spoke about Krishna was glorious, he comes once in the Yuga cycle in the Lord Day, Lord Master.
Yeah, one day of Brahma. Yeah.
So do we know what avatars typically appear and walk with your God? Or is each avatar always unique, or is it everyone?
Well, they're regular. They have the regular, the Dwarpa Yuga avatar teaches deity worship. The one in Treta Yuga teaches sacrifices. The one in Satya Yuga meditation. And the color is there, white in Satya Yuga, and red, Rakta, in Dwarpa Yuga. And it says, Jiva Goswami says actually the Dwarpa Yuga one's green. Normally is green. In our case, it's Shama, it's Krishna, in our particular yoga. And the one in Kali Yuga is black, Krishna. Black in color. Those are the normal colors. And they're said to be expansions of the Manvantara avatar. So when the Manu reigns, or the Manu and his descendants reign for 71 yuga cycles, then there's a deity that resides over that 71 yuga cycles. Our present deity is Vamanadeva. So he expands into the yuga avatars, who are also full, except the Kali Yuga avatar is a Shaktivesh avatar. So that's the normal procedure. Expansions from the Manvantara avatar. And they have the white color, red color, green color, and black color. So, but ours are special because we get Krishna appearing, who's Shama, a darkish blue color, and then in Kali Yuga we get yellow color. And they're not expansions from the Manvantara avatar, it's Krishna, Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna himself, and his other form, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in other words, very special. Our particular 28th Yuga cycle in Vaivasvata Manvantara is special.
So, colors are constant, the Yuga Dharma is constant, but there's new personalities each time?
Well, there's Supreme Lord, so Supreme Lord is the all Supreme Lord. No, they teach the same thing, they have the same appearance, so we can say it's the same person, like Rama is always Rama. Or so the Yuga avatars are also, you know, the same color, same appearance, same activity, etc. each time they come, and most 1,000 times in one day of Brahma. Yeah. Expansions of the Manvantara avatar, like Vamanadeva. Of course, in each Manvantara, then there's a different avatar in each Manvantara period, so therefore they'll expand from a different avatar each time.
Okay. Right. Hare Krishna.